welcome to Montgomery Community Media's latest and newest podcast called MoCo's Most Famous. My name is Joe Yashroff. I'm the, what is my title? Director of Content and Operations. Is that right? We'll go with that. Our first guest, a very special guest to everyone in the state of Maryland and beyond, Coach Gary Williams. Thank you very much for being our first guest.
Glad to be here.
And I know you're a podcast specialist now, having done that for a year, so I'm going to take tips from you.
You might not want tips from me, but because you want to be successful with this.
Well, so. There you go. Well, thanks again, Gary, for being here. We're going to get into a lot of the stuff that people want to hear, Maryland basketball, college hoops, NBA, even the Super Bowl. But I wanted to talk to you about, we're called Montgomery Community Media, so we're a Montgomery County-centric place. And you've spent almost 30 years of your life here. And what is it about Montgomery County that, why did you choose to live here, and what do you like about it?
I really like paying all the taxes you pay in Montgomery County.
Great
it's
point.
Probably my favorite. Now, what I like about it is the convenience of living in Montgomery County. Mm-hmm. You can get to airports really quickly. Mm-hmm. The Beltway's right there if you want to try that once in a while. And just, you know, with Bethesda being Bethesda now, it's almost like you don't have to go anywhere else if you don't want to branch down to D.C. or up to Baltimore or whatever. Plus, you know, if you're into sports, it is a great area. You have a lot of professional teams in the area, a lot of college teams you can get involved with. So I've always enjoyed that part of it.
Any favorite spots, any restaurants, any places you would recommend?
Just over the border is Chatter Restaurant. But
well, let's talk about Chatter. No. I think you're a part owner there. Is that?
Yeah, it's two blocks into D.C. on Wisconsin Avenue. And Tony Kornheiser, Maury Povich, Alan Bubas, myself, we ventured into it. And it's been a lot of fun. We're never going to get rich, probably, but it's a lot of fun.
And now it's the podcast studios there. And I know
quite a few podcast studios now, both entertainment like Tony Kornheiser's podcast. And a lot of news podcasts are coming out of there now also. So that part's been good. And the studio was built right into Chatter once we bought the place.
How do you like being a podcaster?
It's fine. I like it better than the radio because you have a little bit more freedom. And, you know, you don't get cut off when you get into something good all the time. I think I like that part of it.
Like when you did TV at Comcast Sportsnet?
Yeah,
the Big
when
Ten
we were
Network.
There at Comcast together, we... you have 15 seconds. I said, well, that's not going to happen, you know. I enjoy it. I do.
That's great. Well, you can give, I will take any advice you can give me for a new podcaster like myself. All right, so I want to talk to you about current Maryland basketball. So this year seems to be a little bit of a resurgence with the team. Now, there was a little hiccup over the weekend, the game at Illinois. Now, as a former coach, you've been out of coaching for 8 years, I believe.
8 years.
So I know you still look at the game as a coach. Are you excited to see that Maryland basketball seems to be kind of in a good place or moving in the right direction?
Yeah, I think that you see what's out there now in college basketball with a lot of the power conference teams. You're always going to be young, basically, because if you get a really good player, like a Herter last year, he's probably going to go into the draft because of the finances involved. You almost have to recommend to your player that you really look at that because there's too much money to be made. You can't do that, and if he got hurt, you know, that money wouldn't be there. So you lose a guy like that. This year, the team is, they do have three guys that played a lot in a starting lineup, which helps. Obviously, Fernando's a great inside player. A lot of people thought he would have gone into the draft last year also, but he didn't, thankfully for Maryland. And then a guy like Collins is a very good college point guard. He's probably a little small for the next level, but he's a very good college player. And Marcel from Baltimore is very good. And so they have three guys that played a lot. You know, they talk about Maryland being really young, but when you have three guys with that type of experience, that can help you with the other young players that are on the team. And they have a very good young player in Jalen Smith who can really play, and he was considered one of the top recruits in the country. So you have, nowadays, you have to put it together for 1 year. That's what you're looking for, to have a good year as possible. Now, you can practice in the summer, which you couldn't do when I was coaching. So you have more time, and you can bring your freshmen in for that also. You have your complete team, and so you get more practice time. But a lot of these guys, 1 year isn't enough. It takes longer than that. So each year, you're kind of refocused on how you can be the best possible team. And I think they're good this year. What they haven't done yet is had that surge where they stay consistent for a long period of time. Like the Illinois game, that was where Dad come from. You know, nobody could figure that out. But now they won their last game against Northwestern, and hopefully they're going into their toughest stretch of the schedule so far, and they're at Wisconsin next, and that can be brutal and probably be warm out there, probably get up to zero by the time they get up there. So
So you mentioned the Illinois, you know, losing to Michigan State on the road by double digits, that's not stunning, that's not surprising. Yeah. But you go, you play Illinois, which was supposed to be a home game, and then Coach moved it to New York, which some people have questioned, but you lose that game. I know there are no positives from that, but how can you use that to turn it into a positive?
Well, you do two things. You completely ignore it, and, you know, that's one game out of, hopefully you play 30 to 35, and you just leave it alone, or you just say, this can't happen. You know, we can't do this anymore if we want to have a successful season. These things can't take place. Good teams react to that. Most every team, they're still 18 to 22 years old, you know, the kids that are playing. And most teams have one game like that during the season, but you can't have more than one. And this time of year, it's critical. From now on, it's critical. If you do make the NCAA tournament, it has a lot to do with seeding so that you get easy games, those first two games or whatever. So you just can't afford losses that'll hurt you, because a lot of times the selection committee looks at reasons why you don't get a high seed. Mm-hmm. Illinois game is a reason why.
Right. You know? Bad loss, yeah. as we call it in the business. So when you watch a game, you obviously don't watch it like the rest of us. You watch it as a coach, as a former coach. Can you watch a game without being a coach?
Not really. You go into it thinking that, you know, you just want to sit there and watch it, but you start looking at situations, substitutions, things like that you did. I did it for 44 years, and it's, you just can't walk away from that. And that's enjoyable. I try not to be obnoxious if anybody's there with me. But now my granddaughter and grandson are playing basketball at the freshman and varsity level in high school. So I get into that pretty quickly also, where they can be, they want to know things. You know, they'll send me the tapes of their games, and I have to dissect them for them.
Wow.
So we're breaking tape down again.
That's very interesting. So I was going to ask you, if you go to the games, are you that guy in the crowd? Are you going nuts, or have you not seen the games in person?
No, I've seen a couple in person. I don't go much because it's can be a little distracting. So it's easier to watch it on television, but I can sit there and watch a game. I mean, I don't go crazy. I did that, you know, when I was coaching. So
I remember that.
There's only so much crazy you can do. So now I'm relaxed watching a game.
Speaking of being relaxed, how are you enjoying your retirement years?
Enjoying it. I was doing quite a bit for Maryland in terms of fundraising, working with you at Comcast, doing some Big Ten Network things, which I still do a show with them each week, and trying to be a better golfer, which is possible for me. I don't think I have the right personality to
for golf,
be a golfer. Yeah,
that level-headed,
kind of thing. Yeah, and like
you've
probably seen all the recent stories about the pace of play with golf. Well, I would help that though, because I play quick.
That's good.
I don't have any patience to.
There's nothing worse than a bad slow golfer. Correct.
Thank you.
Yes, I'll continue to pass that word along to people on the courses that I play. What has been the best part, and I want to say retirement, I know you're doing things, but what has been the best part of not coaching? That's the first question.
Best part, probably you're healthier. Basketball coaching is a tough lifestyle because a lot of the games are at night. Can't sleep after a game, at least in my case. So all of a sudden you got to get up early to get in here because you play 2-3 days later once you get into the season. You're always thinking about recruiting. That's always there. That's 365 because you can't get away from the recruiting thing, especially the way the game is now with players leaving early and transferring, which has become another factor in college basketball. So, and you find yourself not eating properly, eat late. You don't eat the right things. You know, you don't want to take time to have a nice dinner or things like that. You always feel like you're wasting time if you weren't doing something connected to basketball. So I feel a lot better now than I did when I stopped coaching. Hopefully that was, in terms of my health, that was a good move to stop coaching when I did.
That's great to hear. Now, I remember you told me one time that one of the hard parts of coaching is when the phone rings, you're always thinking it's something bad or somebody did something.
Phone rings after 10 o'clock at night. It's never good. You know, that was never a good call. And a lot of times players don't realize their position on a campus. They're tall. They're recognizable because of television now. Just about every game's on television. So if there is a party and something happens, the basketball player can the most easily identified person in that situation. If there's 100 people there, everybody can pick out the basketball player. And so you try to tell that to your players once they arrive on campus, that this is part of the commitment of being a college basketball player. You have to make sure you're not at places, and they have to take care of each other. In other words, if they see something brewing at a party or whatever, you got to grab that player that might be there with you and take them out of that situation. And, you know, just the idea that there's a lot of people out there, especially nowadays with all the internet situations, things like that, that people try to take them down. You know, they're jealous, you know, and so that's what happens. So you don't miss that 24-hour a day being responsible for your players. Good example, if I have a 22-year-old senior and he steals a car, that's my responsibility. I didn't take care of the kid. I should have done a better job with him. If I'm coaching the Wizards and a 19-year-old lottery pick steals a car, well, that's on that kid. I mean, he's a pro. You know, he doesn't. And see, that's the difference in pro and college coaching. Pro coaching, you worry about your team, and you know, you have those same issues. But they're men. They're on their own in the public opinion.
I think you answered my next question with that previous answer, but I'll ask it anyway. If somebody came to you with a great offer to coach, would you consider it?
Yeah, I would, but I don't think that's going to happen because of my age, to be honest. But I think, you know, I could still coach because I look at Boeheim. He's my age. He's a year older than me. In fact, Krzyzewski's my age. And those guys are doing pretty well. And I, you know, I've kept up with the game and all those things, so I know the game. And you might be a better coach because you've been able to look at different things outside of what you thought was important, because you get very narrow during a season with your team, which you have to do. And so, but I don't think that phone call is not going to happen.
But you're not missing it to the point where you're craving getting back there.
No, I think that's the part of that was the unknown when I stopped coaching. I was 67 and I'd coached 44 years. So, you know, I had my share of coaching. But at the same time, you get used to going to practice. Practice is the most enjoyable thing you do because it's just you and the players. It's like your classroom, you're teaching. And when you're a basketball coach, you only have your 12. You don't have 85 like you do as a college football coach. And so you know each player, you know what they need to be motivated, how they need to be motivated, all those things with each player. And you live and die with that because it's your offense, it's your defense. It's not a coordinator doing those things. It's you, you know. And if your defense is no good, well, it's on you. You miss that action. You know, when you walk out there in a court for practice, that's a pretty good hit. And then when you walk out for a big game, that's a bigger hit. You know, it's like you can feel the noise, best way I can describe it.
Great stuff from Hall of Fame coach Gary Williams. My name is Joe Yashroff. This is MoCo's Most Famous on Montgomery Community Media, and we'll be back in a moment to talk about what everyone wants to hear about, the good old days.
MCM, your community media center, is making Montgomery County a great place to live through programs like 21 This Week. Montgomery County's hardest-hitting political talk show keeps you up to date with the local political scene. Montgomery Community Media. Our middle name is Community.
Welcome back to MoCo's Most Famous on Montgomery Community Media. This is our latest, newest, I'm not going to say best because Doug Tallman does a great podcast, but it's one of our podcasts, and I'm here with the coach, Gary Williams, Naismith Hall of Famer, College Basketball Hall of Famer, probably some other halls of fame that I'm forgetting. Are there any other Hall of Fames in New Jersey or anywhere?
Yeah, there's New Jersey Sports Hall of Fame. There's
okay.
Camden County right beside Philadelphia Hall of Fame. Woodrow Wilson Hall of Fame, where I taught, South Jersey Basketball Hall of Fame.
Wow.
And there's some others.
And I know you coach soccer, but you're not in any soccer coaching Hall of Fames?
They haven't called yet.
They haven't called yet?
There's probably a reason for that.
Probably. But I admire that you took on soccer way back when. How was that, by the way?
It was something, you know, and it was a great lesson for me that I tried to pass on. It was something that I definitely didn't want to do, but it was the only way to get to college coaching because I didn't know anybody other than Tom Davis, who became the head coach at Lafayette. This is 1971. There was no money for a full-time assistant basketball coach, but the soccer coach left. So I assumed his job because that's the only money they had in the budget. And You know, the good thing was for 6 years, I still made decisions as a head coach before I became a head basketball coach. And that really helped me once I became a head basketball coach.
In fact, I was just, as you know, I teach a class at Maryland. You were kind enough to speak at it last year. I was telling the kids that the answer is always yes. If you have an opportunity to do something, even if it's not at the place that you want or the exact thing that you want to do, the answer is yes, because you don't know what that might turn into.
That's a great lesson. When I was starting out as a coach, I was a high school coach for 3 years. And, you know, back then I was making $7,500, which would probably be $30,000 now, something like that. And, you know, you weren't starving or anything, but you never even considered how much money you were making, because back then John Wooden wasn't making any money in coaching basketball. And so nobody else was. But you did it for the love of the game. And I think I told your students that night that if you can find something that you like to do, love to do, then you become better at doing that part of what you like. And so all of a sudden you might be better than you would if you made more money initially, but didn't like it. You wouldn't work as hard at it. You wouldn't get into it as much. And all of a sudden when that next job came, you wouldn't get that job. But if you were over here doing what you love to do, you might get that job. And I think that's something that kind of stayed with me throughout my whole working career.
That's a great lesson. All right, so I want to talk about everybody's favorite subject, 2002 National Championship. Is there a day that you don't think about it or are reminded about or asked about winning the national championship?
There's usually something that happens or somebody does mention it to you most days. I wouldn't say every day, but, you know, most days. And there's a lot of great memories there. And the amazing thing is you can be riding in your car somewhere and all of a sudden you think of a play in that game, you know, an individual play from that game and that whole run in the NCAA tournament. And it goes so fast. Those 3 weeks go so fast in the NCAA tournament that you don't really have a chance to enjoy anything. You just next game, that type of thing. And so, especially since I stopped coaching, you've had a lot of time to reflect back on it, appreciate the players that you did have, the assistant coaches you did have, and the fans. You know, Maryland had never won a national championship. We went to the Final Four for the first time the year before. And so there was a lot of things involved in those 2 years that were lasting memories for a lot of great Maryland people that had given so much of their time, money, whatever, to be fans of the university.
And people, most people know and some don't, just the sacrifices you made to make that happen. I mean, you don't win a national championship by just showing up and drawing up a couple of plays. You made a lot of sacrifices to bring a championship to the University of Maryland.
Well, the first thing we had to do when I got there in 89 was to convince the powers that be that basketball could be a positive statement for the university again. And that was really hard because there was a culture in there by the time I got there. Things had gone bad. Len Bias had died. The previous coach, you know, really struggled, probably wasn't given the assistance necessary when you're a high school coach to become a head coach in the ACC back then. You just don't do that. If I ever tried to be a high school coach and take the Maryland job, I wouldn't have been successful, because you need that assistant coaching situation, the highs and lows, the amount of time that you have to spend as a college coach compared to a high school coach is just incredible. You know, it's not even, there's no comparison. And so there's lessons to be learned. And I think that really hurt that situation. So when I got there, the NCAA was investigating, and we went through a first year, and I really, that's the one team I really feel bad for. We beat Carolina twice. We won at Southern Cal. We were a good team. We won 19 games and only played like 25, 26 back then. And we didn't get even a sniff for the NCAA tournament, because the NCAA wanted no parts of Maryland in the tournament that year, because we were under the gun with the investigation. And we got, you know, 2 years no NCAA tournament, 2 years no television, and that really knocks you out if you're a major program, because that's why the good players go to schools for the exposure. So we had to go from there, and it was a great experience, but one I never want to go through again.
Yeah. Well, you know, you could have left Maryland at any point, and a lot of people know that. And so I thank you, and everybody associated with Maryland thanks you for what you did for the school. So I want to ask you, the national championship, you were a great coach with or without winning a national championship, not just saying that, everybody knows that. How important was it, though, to get that, you know, I don't want to say for your resume, but how important was it for you personally to win the national championship?
Well, a lot of people thought, like, you win a national championship one day, and the next day they thought I was a better coach. Well, you know, I mean, we won the biggest game you can win, but that doesn't mean, you know, that you were any better as a coach that particular day. And so you kept that in mind. It was important to me because I probably more important because I went to Maryland, where we were told what we couldn't do for a long time. you can't do this. You'll never be as good as Duke or Carolina. You know, was the theme song of the Maryland job. And from some Maryland fans, they said, well, you know, you beat them, but that's Carolina and that's Duke. You know, you'll never be as good. So winning the national championship, going to 2 Final Fours, kind of shut those people up, is the best way I can put it, in coaching parlance. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that for maybe the wrong reasons, but at the same time, the respect for the university, the respect for Maryland basketball, that brought that full circle, which, you know, was important to me. Plus, applications for the incoming class of 2003 went up 25%, which means your grade point average in that freshman class is a lot higher and things like that. So we gave back to the university by winning that national championship.
Absolutely. I had a great question and it just went right out of my head. So, all right, I'm going to bring you down now, down from the national championship to what loss, and I know coaches obsess more over losses than great wins. Correct me if I'm wrong, but what is the loss that keeps you up at night and, you know, that you go, oh, I cannot believe we lost that game?
Most recent one was 2010. We were playing Michigan State. They had Green, who plays for Golden State now.
And, Draymond, yeah.
Yeah, Draymond Green and some other really good players. And we were 15 down in the second half. And we had a player named Gravis Vasquez, who was an All-American and one of the great players ever to play at Maryland. And we had to win our last 7 games that year in conference to tie Duke for the regular season championship in 2010. And we got into the NCAA tournament, and we got a tough draw. We had to play Michigan State in our second game. And we came back somehow against a very good defensive team. And Tom Izzo's teams at Michigan State are always tough. You know, they never back up when you play against them. And so to make up that 15 and to take the lead on a great shot by Vasquez, they go down, they mess up. They get it kind of trapped on the sideline. They throw a pass to the top of the circle, and they had a player there that couldn't make a shot from 5 feet for Michigan State. The kid ducks and lets the ball go to the next guy coming in, a guy who's a good shooter. Lucius was his name, who left school 2 weeks later, by the way. And he nailed a shot to beat us. The tougher thing about that game, another tough thing, is in the other bracket, which who we would have played in the Elite Eight after that, Northern Iowa upset Kansas. So we would have had Northern Iowa. If you win that game, and we would have been favored in that game, you would have played Tennessee the way things worked out to get to the Final Four. And Michigan State got to the Final Four, and, you know, they earned it. They deserved it. But I still think about that game, how that could happen at the end of the game. You know, there's just some things that happen in sports that, you know, you just shake your head and hopefully you can move on.
I hear you. As a Maryland fan and supporter, I remember that game very well, too. But remember the 2002 championship more. I go back and watch that tape whenever I can. Do you, speaking of which, have you gone back? You must have gone back and watched that game.
Never seen the whole thing.
Wow. I've
watched parts. You know, you look at it. But
it was an ugly game, I remember.
Yeah, we didn't play particularly, but that's not why I watch it. I mean, there was too many things that you always will remember. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't have to watch the tape to look at that. And, you know, you see those guys now like Lonnie Baxter, Chris Wilcox, people like that, Steve Blake, Juan Dixon, Byron Mouton, Taj Holden, you know, mm-hmm. all those guys. They're all successful, you know, in their own way. They've all been successful. I like that because sometimes it doesn't work out that way. You know, you think you have a player, you've done a good job with them, not just coaching, but getting them ready for the real world. And all of a sudden something happens and, you know, that hurts. That hurts as a coach. And these guys, they were always level-headed. They were always competitive. Some of the toughest basketball we played that year was going against each other in practice. You'd had to stop scrimmages sometimes because there was going to be fights. And that's how much they wanted to win. Wow. You know, it was a very positive thing.
Now, I know you're not going to tell me your favorite player because it's like picking your favorite kid and all that. So, but I know that Gravis is one of your favorite players, one of the favorite players for a lot of Maryland fans. What is it, if you had to boil it down to one thing about Gravis, what would it be that made him the player that he was?
His wanting to win. He was a great individual player, and he was going to score 20 his senior year, whether we won or lost. Didn't matter. But he'd do everything that he possibly could do to win the game for us. And I really respected that. I mean, here's a kid who came out of Venezuela, played with Kevin Durant in high school.
At Montrose.
At Montrose Christian in Montgomery County.
There you go.
There we go. Got to plug in. And I remember going to see Durant play, and there was this kid that was crazy. You know how great this was. He played with soccer emotion, as we used to say. He had soccer emotion in his game. Anyway, he was just, you kept watching Durant, but then you kept watching this other guy. He made great passes, knew the game really well, smiling, having fun, you know, that type of thing. And I remember saying to my assistant, I said, you know, I'd like to coach that kid. That'd be a lot. Not thinking about ever offering him a scholarship or anything, just the way he played. Then the more you watched him, in the next year, Durant was gone, and, you know, you watched him play. And he was a great player. He had English was his second language. When he went to the university, he had to take courses his freshman year, English for second language students. But at the same time, those courses counted as credits in terms of the NCAA, but they didn't count toward a degree. And yet Graves still graduated in 4 years. And, you know, just things like that made him special.
Okay, we're going to do a little lightning round here. Best coach you ever coached against?
Probably Bob Knight, Mike Krzyzewski. I can't say one. Bob Knight, Mike Krzyzewski, Tom Izzo. Go with those three.
Okay. Those are three Hall of Famers right there. Best player you ever coached against?
Grant Hill.
And what made Grant Hill?
He could do everything. He could have played point guard if they didn't have Bobby Hurley playing for him. He was 6'8". He was a tremendous athlete, yet content to score 16, which allowed Duke to win a national championship.
Who is the best player you ever saw play at any point on TV, in person, just the best player you ever saw?
Michael Jordan.
Is it, I mean, you know, some people assume he's the GOAT, and, you know, there are others, some old-timers say, well, what about Russell? What about Chamberlain? What about Oscar, Magic Johnson? So, in no doubt in your mind, Michael is the greatest player of all time?
Well, I mean, it's really hard to compare eras.
Right.
Like, Bill Russell won, I think, 10 or 11 NBA championships, but there was eight teams then. The athleticism wasn't in the game then like it is now. Jordan played at a time where the game had gotten very athletic, but the rules were still, you could be physical. Now the NBA today, the guys are, you know, the Hardens of the world, people like that, are scoring a ton of points, but you can't touch them. You could touch Jordan, and he'd still score on you. And defensively, he made the all-defensive team like 6-7 times in his career. So I'll go with him. But, you know, obviously arguments can be made for LeBron, Russell, Oscar Robertson, Jerry West.
Wilt.
Yeah.
You mentioned Harden. So a couple of NBA questions for you. James Harden is doing unbelievable things, scoring 30 points, 40 points every game. Obviously, you have to admire what he's doing, but there are some who criticize him because, you know, it used to be called a ball hog or black hole. You know, once he gets the ball, nobody else touches it. So where are you on James Harden?
Well, I mean, what you said is true. It's unbelievable the amount of points he scores. They don't call walking on him. He walks two ways. He walks, well, the Euro step is a walk for those basketball people out there. That was 20 years ago. That was just a walk. You know, you couldn't do that. So they're giving you that third step now, which is impossible to defend because you change direction on that. The defensive player has done a good job. He's taken his position. Then all of a sudden, there comes this next step that goes the other way, away from where you are on defense. So you can't guard that. And that's where he gets fouled. You reach. And you try to, you know, grab him back. But the other thing, when he steps back for a three, he's got a great step back three-pointer. He walks every time he steps back. You can't move both your feet when you step back. That's called a walk. You're supposed to have a pivot foot, you know. But for Harden, he's, you know, the great players in the NBA are allowed to do more than the average player in the NBA. And Harden gets away with murder. Anything close contact-wise, he's going to the free throw line. Players now are guarding him. I don't know if how many people have seen that lately. They put their hands behind their back playing defense. That used to be a defensive drill, you know, for balance and things like that. Now they do it so a referee can't call a foul on you. Because Harden's great at bringing the ball up into your hands if you're extended with your arm at all. And it's been amazing to watch. But the thing is, are they trying to win championships there or are they trying to put on a show? See, that's what bothers me as a coach. I don't think they'd be better if they could get, you know, one or two other really good scorers and Harden score 10 points a game less. They'd be better. They'd win more games. But it's the biggest show in the NBA right now is when Harden comes on television and, you know, people watch.
And the amazing thing about Golden State is they put on a show and they're great.
Yeah. Right. And see, Golden State, the only thing I don't like about Golden State is they've created a situation. My grandson's in ninth grade. He walks on the court and he starts shooting threes. You know, he's trying to kick his butt, get inside, shoot a couple layups, get loose, you know. But they've created this three-point thing where that's the only way to play basketball. And if you look at Golden State, they don't don't just shoot threes, but that's what people think. They're great at taking the ball to the basket. Curry's great putting the ball up on the glass, things like that. And they do a lot of really good things. So Golden State is fun to watch.
Best team of all time? Can you make that argument?
I'd say the old Boston Celtics teams would be right there because they won so many championships and they had so many Hall of Famers. You know, guys like, nobody even talks about John Havlicek anymore. He was like 27,000 points in his career. Just Tom Heinsohn. You know, Sam Jones, Casey Jones is a backcourt, you know, just incredible. And they were great teams, no doubt about it. And people say, well, yeah, but they, you know, only two guys could dunk on that team. It's just the way it was then, right. You know. If they'd be playing today, they'd all be dunking, they'd all be shooting threes. And, you know, you change with the times.
All right, a couple more minutes here, and then we're going to wrap up. There are a lot of perceptions of you. Are there perceptions of you that bother you, or is there something that you'd like people to know about you that maybe they don't?
I probably earned most of the perceptions. You know, it was amazing. I'm really laid back. People don't know. You know me a little bit off the court. But when you walk out of that locker room and you're going against the best teams in the country or whatever, that's everything I had done in my life up until that point of that game starting at 8 o'clock, say. Those next 2 hours were going to show that, you know, how good a team you were, if you could coach, you know, all those things. So I think that went all into it. And the greatest thing for me about those 2 hours, the bad thing was I was really nervous before a game. I could barely, couldn't eat, couldn't do anything like that. By the time I got out in the court, I was ready. You know, I could, you know, I could really function. I could really focus. I could do it for those 2 hours. Now, people saw me. They said I was crazy on the sideline, all those things. But there was a method to my madness. I mean, each coach has to coach his own way. You can't be, I remember Terry Holland, a great coach at Virginia, when I first got to Maryland. He sat there, was a gentleman, didn't yell at the referees much, two stomach operations later. You know, and so, at least for me, I let it out. And people saw that. And, you know, I'd probably try to change some things if I ever did coach again, but probably wouldn't happen. But, you know, so I was really glad that I had something that I could put everything into. I guess it's the best way to describe it. So people saw that. If people only saw me in the games, I don't blame them. They thought I was crazy. But people around the office, around the Coalfield House, Xfinity Center, things like that, they knew me differently than from the 2 hours I coached.
Sounds like a great last word, Gary. Thank you again for everything you've done for everybody in the state of Maryland, at University of Maryland. Thank you for being our guest on the first podcast, and which we call, what do we call in this, Gaynell? MoCo's Most Famous on Montgomery yeah. Community Media. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and you know, hopefully this really goes and is a lot of success with it.
I appreciate that. I'd like to thank our executive producer, Gaynell Evans, and our engineers, Mike Valentine and Carolyn Raskauskas. Thanks for joining us, and see you or hear you next time.